We have a quorum. Messages from the governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the governor to inform you that he has vetoed the following bills, House Bill 4056 and House Bill 4064.
Representative Williams, to your motion on vetoed House Bill 4056.
Mr. Speaker, I move that House Bill 4056 be repassed, notwithstanding the governor's veto.
Representative Williams moves that House Bill 4056 be repassed, notwithstanding the governor's veto. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we approach this morning, obviously, together again with, I think, some real seriousness of the situation that awaits us. Yesterday, I spent the better part of 2.5 hours at my dentist's office in the dental chair having my teeth drilled. This morning, I have a small, or actually not small, large temporary crown on the back of my tooth. And I will tell you that if I had my choice of being here or back in the dentist chair, I'd pick the teeth drilling just like that. Yeah, thanks, Cedric. I appreciate the offer. I may need the medication a little later. Vetoes are not a thing to be considered lightly, and we know that. But it is part of our process, and as the governor has exercise his constitutional prerogative to veto, it is also within our constitutional prerogative of this legislative assembly to vote to override those vetoes when we believe it is in the best interest of the state and those that we represent. The policy on this particular bill, House Bill 4056, relating to the bonding, is not a policy issue that I think any of us are happy about. You will recall in special session number 3, when we sent over the House package, it did not include a bonding component. But through the 3-week process of bipartisan negotiations, in fact, what we passed with bipartisan votes, a majority of those votes being Democrat in the Senate and Republican in the House, but nonetheless a bipartisan effort, passed House Bill 4056, which included the additional bonding money for schools and the safety net were the economic forecast to go down further. We are in a great state of economic upheaval in Oregon, brought about by many factors, including the national recession. And each of us have had conversations with folks in legislative revenue, and we've read the papers, and we've had those conversations, and we know that the situation is not bettering itself in the immediate future. Yet we are 2 weeks away from the beginning of school. And in our rush to pass a package of bills that would address primarily the immediate needs of schools in the third special session, we did so in order to grant them some degree of certainty as best we could as they began the process of preparing for and opening schools at the beginning of September. These bonding packages were no one's first choice. And I've heard many remarks as of late that we are borrowing against our future. And when you don't have the resources in our private lives and in our business lives, sometimes that means you borrow. I thought back on my own personal experience. You know, I was born and raised in Bend, and we didn't have a lot of money. And when it came time for me to go to college, my options were really threefold. I could pay for it myself, I could get a scholarship, and I could borrow. And I did all three of those things. And when I borrowed that money, that wasn't borrowing against my future. It was borrowing for my future. This bonding package that was in House Bill 4056 does create an opportunity for us to do some borrowing. Not a place we'd like to go, but a place that we have to go for the future of the children that are starting school next September, 2 weeks from now. This isn't necessarily just a matter of policy or politics or ideology. It's not an academic exercise. In my household, I've got 2 school-age children, one that will be in 5th grade and one that will be in 4th grade in September. So in the Williams household, this is real. This is immediate. And we are like thousands of other households all over this state that are waiting to know what will happen in September, to give some certainty to teachers, to parents, to students, to school boards, and to school administrators. In my district, the district that I primarily represent, they are looking at the possibility of an $8 million swing between now and the beginning of the school year based on the decisions that we essentially make today. How do you manage that $8 million swing 2 weeks before school starts? No one likes the choices. Sometimes in the law, there's a doctrine we refer to, we call it the choice of evils. It's a doctrine that people, when confronted with two bad choices, are forced to choose the one that is the least destructive. I submit to you, colleagues, that House Bill 4056 and voting on this override is the least destructive of the choices that we can make today. It is the choice that I think buys us the time, grants some certainty to school children today, in the immediate, while we then face our more serious and troubling questions about what do we do next. And those are questions which we will obviously have to face, and questions which I encourage all of us to begin speaking about and trying to address. But we also know the realities of the current environment in which we're in, and we know that those answers aren't going to be forthcoming before the start of school. And they're not going to be forthcoming probably in the middle of September. And even if they were forthcoming in November, it would be too late to save this year's kids. And I'm not willing to sacrifice, and I hope you're not willing to sacrifice, even a year of Oregon school children's education while we look for the broader, longer-term solution. I'll join every one of you in that fight, and I have joined you in that fight for the broader solution, but I am not willing to sacrifice the immediate. Now, this is a tough vote. It's a tough vote for all of us. It was a tough vote for me to vote for it the first time, but we have determined the policy by a majority of this legislative's view when we did this in special session number 3. And I can promise you, colleagues, that this vote will not get any easier. There will be tougher votes than this that lay ahead for us, whether in September in special session number 5 or in January as we go into a new regular session of the legislature. The votes will be tougher than this one. So I ask you to join me. I ask you to vote to override the governor's veto of these bills so we can grant some certainty to our education system. We can move on to the subject that we want to have the conversation about, which is where is the long-term solution and how do we get there come January of 2003. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For the discussion, Representative Leonard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this has truly been a struggle, individually and collectively, for all of us. I started out in this decision-making process of how to vote here today thinking I could not override the governor's vetoes because I knew that this bill and the next one we're going to vote on are just bad public policy. To buy a house and to finance that house by borrowing on your credit card is a vicious cycle that leads to homelessness, and I know that. Yet, I met with the school superintendent at Centennial School District that I represent, Dr. Keith Robinson, a man all of us from East Portland very much respect. And he begged me to reconsider. And out of respect for him, I said I would. He described to me the dreadful cuts that would occur in the Centennial School District. And I will not mislead any of you here. I was persuaded by that. Then I met with Jim Scherzinger. Most of us here have worked with Jim Scherzinger when he was the fiscal officer in this building. Nobody in this building respects Jim Scherchinger more than I do. And when the Portland School Board decided to permanently keep Jim Scherchinger as its superintendent, I wrote them an email saying, I support that decision. He is a man of integrity. He might not be the most politically savvy guy in the world, but he has true good intentions, and he'll learn. He begged me to reconsider my vote. He described to me the dreadful cuts that are almost amounting to $37 million on top of a budget that has been cut too much already this year, on top of the slow erosion of classroom services to Portland kids over the last 10 years. And I'd be less than honest if I didn't tell you that I was also moved by that. So it'd be fair to say I did a 180. Because what everybody kept saying was, what's the plan? What do we do next? Randy, you go down there, you sustain the governor's vetoes, what's the next step? That was a good point. You know why that's a good point? I'm not proud to say this. I've lost faith in this body. I have absolutely lost faith in the ability of this body to do what I have been preaching about for 9 years in the Oregon legislature. Adequately fund schools, create a reserve fund with the kicker fund, and when you hit the slow economic times such as we're in now, you can use that reserve fund to pick up and fill the slack. This body has refused to do that. So we find ourselves in the position we are now. What do we do next? And that was a very persuasive argument. Look, leadership is a lonely job. People run around and call themselves leaders and think of themselves as leaders. But if everybody was a leader, we wouldn't be here right now. Leadership requires doing things that cause other people to follow because of faith. And Mr. Speaker, I hope you'll indulge me for 1 minute, because I've described how I got to 180 degrees, but as we all know, a circle's 360. Let me tell you what brought me back that other 180 degrees for a total of 360, right where I started at in the beginning. My wife insisted that in the middle of this current campaign I'm involved in, the ballots of which go out in 2 weeks, that we fulfill our commitment to this little cabin, log cabin we rented on the Matolius River. So this last Sunday we went. I was sitting by the Matolius River having, and I know, Mr. Speaker, you're an avid fly fisherman, and I'm not an avid fly fisherman. I wish sometime maybe in Elgin you'd take me out and give me some pointers, because I clearly proved to myself I'm not good at it. But it was fun. And I sat down at a chair by the Matolius, and I was rereading John Adams' autobiography. And he described a time in his...
Representative Betsy Johnson yields.
Thank you, Representative. And he described a time in 1777 when the Revolutionary War was at its height and summer had set in. General Washington had, as some of you remember, in that famous photo of him standing on a boat in the middle of the night, had gone across the Delaware River Christmas Day, 1776, surprised the British on the other side, ran them out, and the cold of winter set in. And there they sat at Valley Forge in one of the coldest winters anybody'd ever remembered and hunkered down. Thomas Paine wrote of that winter, "These are the times that try men's souls." And John Adams described in his letter to Abigail the summer patriot, the summer soldier. God save us from the summer patriot and the summer soldier. And what he was talking about were those revolutionary men who were very pro-independence, very anti-British when the weather was warm and good, but had second thoughts when it got real cold. and packed up their stuff and went home to the warmth of the hearth fire and their families. And those men and women were nothing different than you and I. They weren't all gallant, libertarian, pro-independence people. They had to think a lot about what they were doing, because standing up at that time and saying you were pro-independence meant under English law you were a traitor, and the penalty for treason was hanging. So these were not easy decisions these men made. But those that stuck with General Washington had faith in him. They had faith in his leadership. And I'm sure they asked him at times, what's the next plan, General? Where do we go from here? And he didn't know. The greatest military mind of that era didn't know what the next step was, facing overwhelming odds, a superior trained force with better arms. He had no idea. He just knew that he had to keep going and find a weakness in the other side and strike for the cause of freedom, all of which we benefit from here today. So, Mr. Speaker, I say this to you and to my friends, my good friends in the education community. This is not a vote I take against children. This is not a vote I take against Dr. Robinson or Jim Scherchinger. This isn't a vote I take against education. I'm taking a vote because I've had my faith restored in leadership. I've had my faith restored in the governor. I've had my faith restored in you, Mark Simmons. I've had my faith restored in the President of the Senate, Gene Durfler. I believe that we are all Oregonians. And I believe that 225 years into this republic, what unites us is our belief in freedom and opportunity. And I believe that we all understand that what makes us equal is a public education system that provides all children of the poorest families and the richest families the opportunity to succeed in this American experiment. So my vote here today is cast in faith that when we defeat the attempt to override the governor's vetoes here today, the men and women that comprise the leadership of the state of Oregon will get together, put aside their partisan differences, and do the right thing. And you can count me, Mr. Speaker, as a soldier in that effort. And I'll stand by you, I'll stand by the governor, and I'll stand by the President of the Senate to follow you into a solution to this crisis. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I respectfully request a call of the House.
Representative Morgan requests a call of the House. She's joined by Representative Gardner, Representative Nolan, Representative Shetterly, Representative Zahner, Representative Williams, Representative Brown, Representative Backlund. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, the sergeant at arms will attend, and the clerk will call the roll.
Ackerman, Backlund, Barnhart, Bates Beck, Beck Beyer, Alan Brown, Ralph Brown, Butler, Carlson, Close Devlin, Dingfelder, Doyle, Gardner, Gerard, Hansen, Haas, Hayden, Hobson, Jensen, Johnson, Kafori, King, Canope, Krieger, Krupp, Crummel, Cruz, Lee, Leonard, Lowe, March, Merkley Minnis, Monis Anderson, Morgan, Nelson, Nolan, Patridge, Ringo, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Shetterly, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Tootie Smith, Starr, Star Tomei. Tomei Verger. Cheryl Walker. Vicky Walker. Westland. Williams. Wilson. Winters. Worth. Witt. Zahner. And Mr. Speaker, not answering. Bates. Beck. Close. Krupp. Star. Excused. Dingfelder, Schrader, excused, not subject to the call, Krupp.
All members are present. All members are present. Colleagues, we will be at ease under the call. The restrooms in my office are available. Also, there is are some coffee and there's food in there if you get hungry. But that is the extent of our ability to roam while under call. I recognize Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the motion.
To your motion. To the motion.
Colleagues, it's unusual for me to stand up on the floor of the House and make a speech in support or in opposition to any of the bills or measures or motions that come between us. But these are unusual times, and I feel compelled to rise today to speak in favor of the motion that's on the floor of the House. There have been a large number of us on both sides of the aisle and in both houses that have been working on budget rebalance issues since the beginning of December, and we've been working hard on them. And I think that all of us have come to understand a lot of things about revenue and about spending and budgets that we didn't know when we came into this process. And we've been watching the revenue picture, and we've been monitoring the spending picture, and we've been working really hard to bring things in line here in the state of Oregon in these tumultuous and these unpredictable times that we find ourselves. Well, the ground shifted a little bit here on Wednesday in the middle of the week. I was here for a committee meeting, and I went in to talk to the folks in legislative fiscal. And the question that I asked him was, based on the revenue projections where they are right now, and at that time they were somewhere between 125 and around 170, that we could be expect to be down in our September revenue forecast, do me a display that shows me what it's going to look like when we have to balance the books across the different departments and services that the state offers. Well, we worked on how the spreadsheet would look, and you have that spreadsheet on your desk today that came out under my name. The discussions that we got into, they came down and pulled me out of a committee meeting that I was in, and they said, you need to go up and talk to the revenue folks. And so I went into the revenue office. And the bottom line of that discussion was that the bottom is again falling out of the September revenue projection. What we're told is that we now can expect a shortfall that is at least $200 million, and it is going to be in excess of $200 million. We discussed what an operative working number would be that would probably keep us in the ballpark for what we had to look at in September. And the number that we came to was $300 million off of our revenue projections. So I want you to take a moment here and take a look at this spreadsheet. And I want you to go over to the column on the side that's headed with $300 million. And I need you to take a look at the level of cuts that we have to do in order to bring a budget in balance with 9 months left in our fiscal year. And you'll take a look at the K-12 section of that, and you'll see a number that's just over $122 million. And I want you to be very certain when you cast your vote today that you're understanding that if we don't override this veto, if we don't vote in favor of this motion, we're going to wipe out half of the revenue that the K-12 system is going to receive if we're able to override the veto on the retiming measure. That is not a pretty picture, ladies and gentlemen, and it's not a place that any of us come to freely or willingly, and in a perfect world, it's not a place that any of us would choose to find ourselves, but it's the place that we are. I would ask you to consider the fact that we don't have any stability on the revenue forecast side of this. We're still in free fall in the revenue that we can expect to receive. We have a duty to the citizens of Oregon. We have a duty to the children in the K-12 system to do the best we can to provide services to them. We simply don't have the time to do anything but establish a glide pattern here as we bring this thing in. Maintaining the promises that we made on the revenue side to people, maintaining the budgets that we put out there that people built their own budgets on is critical to us as we come into the close of this biennium. And I strongly urge you to vote in favor of this motion so that we can maintain a level of service and bring it down in a way that doesn't crash it into a brick wall. The people of Oregon are depending on us. The school children of Oregon are watching on us. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the motion.
To the motion.
I think we're all familiar with the expression that a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. And that largely captures the question that is before us today. Do we set aside the tobacco bonding bill that we have in hand to explore and look for better revenue measures or program reductions? Well, yes. Let's do it. Let's join together to search for better alternatives than the bonding bill that we have before us at the moment. After all, hasn't almost every member of this body at some point described this bill with words such as ugly, unsatisfactory, unsustainable, self-defeating, or irresponsible. We know this legislation is terrible, and our constituents know that it is terrible. I had 40 constituents in a room on Wednesday night, and not a single one of them thought that this bill was good government policy. Still, many that night, and I think many of us in this room, make the argument that we shouldn't let go of the bird in hand in order to search for the bird in the bush. And quite frankly, I'd rather carry out that search first before we decided to vote on this veto override. I'd rather have a bunch of ideas on the floor of this body to wrestle with before deciding whether or not to keep this bridge in place. But let us remember that this bridge could always be put back in place if we didn't find anything better. So, 2 points weigh in my mind. First, the bird in hand is a miserable mess, and the odds of finding a better bird are high. Let me expand. This bird is a sick, miserable, E. coli-infested, West Nile-assaulted carcass. Colonel Sanders would not put this on your dinner plate. And if we throw this in our stew pot and eat it, we're going to be sick and miserable too. It all goes, of course, to the heart of this question of borrowing to support current services. If fully implemented, the bonding in this bill could cost up to about $100 million in each of the next three biennium. You know, at my meeting on Wednesday night, a constituent put it this way. He said, the House of Representatives has quit wrestling between which good policy to choose, this good policy or that good policy, and has started carrying on a debate with which credit card to use. Do we use a credit card that of bonding, or do we use securities? Do we borrow for 6 years, or do we borrow for 10 years? Do we bond lottery revenues, or do we bond tax revenues? Well, how about this option? Let's accept the governor's invitation to explore real alternatives to debt financing for current state services. Let's cut up those credit cards. Let's not make the symbol of this great state car title loan. Let's not, through this bill, replace our beloved beaver on the state flag with a glaring green and yellow sign saying fast service on payday loans. Let's not make the state slogan she flies on wings borrowed from her children. You know, we have a lot of real options to explore. We can debate and should debate whether the best use of state funds is to grant a brand new $120 million tax credit, as we're doing in the middle of this recession, to an industry that has just received a brand new $600 million federal tax credit. We should have that debate on this floor. We should debate whether it makes sense to put the equivalent of a 5-cent increase in the alcohol tax per bottle and raise $27 million this biennium. I don't know if that's the best policy, but we should have that debate. We should consider eliminating a few tax deductions. These are also called tax expenditures. We provide $6 billion in tax expenditures. We distribute that amount. If we were to distribute 1% less, it would put $60 million into play. We should hold a debate over the percentage of gross revenues that are kept by video poker establishments. Legislative revenue.
Representative Tomei yields.
Thank you, Representative. Legislative revenue has estimated that a change from 34% average to 22% average would raise $15 to $20 million in the next biennium. And we should hold a real debate on the floor of this House about delaying the implementation of the $3,000 cap, which would raise an additional $24 million in this biennium. These are real alternatives. They might not pass, and we might come back to debating whether or not we put back in this bonding bridge to the next biennium. But we certainly shouldn't choose debt financing before we've had that type of tough discussion on the floor of this body. And I understand that these are tough issues to discuss. We risk offending our friends or making enemies. But aren't these the type of tough questions that Oregonians want us to deal with? You know, the path of least resistance, the easy path, is to keep these issues off the floor and to whip out the state credit card to fill the shortfall. Maybe we can all wear T-shirts on the campaign trail, fastest state credit card in the West. But the easy path for this chamber is not the best path, and it's not the right path for the healthy future of this state. You know, this is a moment when we retreat in a sense to our gut instincts. And I can't tell you this, I came down here as a newly elected representative believing that this state was already too indulgent in borrowing, that we shouldn't be bonding video poker proceeds the way we've been doing. And now we're going further down this path. And this is largely a fool's path, of borrowing from our children to pay for our children's education or to fund a current operating deficit. My colleague from Tiger has said that this vote is about whether to sacrifice our children. I respect his opinion, but I would say he's completely wrong. This vote is about how to fund our children's education responsibly. This vote is about how to fill an operating deficit responsibly. And I have complete confidence that the leadership of this body, if we sustain this veto, will work to help us responsibly consider alternatives to fill those gaps. Because every person in this room cares about their children, our collective children, the education of the children of the state of Oregon, and this is not a debate about who loves our children the most. Folks, let's take that bird in hand and throw it into the bush as far as we can toss it. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the motion to override the governor's veto.
To the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise this morning not just as a legislator, but as a deeply concerned citizen of our state. I speak as a parent who has sent two kids to the Salem-Keizer School District. I speak as a retired 37-year high school teacher athletic coach. I speak as a citizen who cares about public education in our state. Finally, I speak as a legislator who truly wants this body to make the right choices today. When I taught, I made it a point to thoroughly learn both sides of an issue. It was also important to focus on the key central points in an argument. That is what I propose to do this morning. First and foremost, to me, if the governor's vetoes are sustained, schools will be deprived of a great deal of money for the 2002-2003 school year, which for most school districts starts the day after Labor Day. Today, we're talking about a total of $317 million, of which $50 million is represented in House Bill 4056. This $50 million is in addition to the cuts that school districts have already made all across the state. For example, I'm told that if the veto on House Bill 4056 is sustained, the Portland Public Schools will lose $5 million additional dollars. I have been told that the Salem-Keizer School District, Oregon's second largest, will lose an additional $2.7 million. The bloodletting will extend to Newburgh, St. Paul, and every one of our state's 198 school districts. Let me personalize the impact of this lost money. Salem-Keizer has already targeted the following programs for additional potential cuts: the elimination of special needs assistance in special education, the elimination of 11 classified custodial FTE, the elimination of one licensed FTE school counselor, the elimination of elementary music, including 8.39 FTE licensed teachers, the reduction of support for high school athletics by 50%, the elimination of middle school co-curricular activities and clubs, and one that is very dear to my heart, the elimination of the reading recovery program. The list goes on. Let me focus on just one program that the Salem-Keizer School District excels in at the national level. I'm talking music. One of our high schools just last year was declared to have the finest music program in America. Also, our other four high schools consistently are judged among the best in whatever music competition they are engaged in, whether it's orchestra, concert choir, band, marching band, to name a few. It is not difficult for us to imagine what will happen to the high school music program if the elementary school program is eliminated. The Oregon School Boards Association and the Confederation of School Administrators urge that we override the governor's vetoes. Also, the Statewide Coalition for School Funding Now, a diverse group that supports adequate funding for K-12 schools, wants the legislature to override. I believe the fact that much of the education community is asking for an override is a most telling argument. A second central core consideration is the governor's stated philosophy of pay-as-you-go. I don't think any Oregonian disputes that goal. It's a commendable goal. However, it is presented as if it is some kind of economic disaster if we bond or borrow any money. It is not a disaster to bond responsibly. We have successfully bonded in the past. We are currently paying off those bonds. We have built many structures on our college campuses with bond money. We have constructed our state government buildings with bond money. In 2001, we bonded to build highways and bridges. In the 1999 session, we bonded to purchase computers for our schools. The list goes on. The point for Oregonians to remember is that we do have the capacity to support the bond sales called for in House Bill 4056. The point for Oregonians to remember is that Oregon continues to have...
Representative Donna Nelson yields.
Thank you, Representative. Oregon continues to have the capacity to support the bond sales called for. We have an excellent bond rating on Wall Street. Again, pay-as-you-go is commendable, but careful bonding for essential programs like financially supporting our public schools is absolutely reasonable. A third core issue to consider today is that if this veto could hardly come at a worse time for our public schools. School is about to start. School budgets and planning are already mired in uncertainty. Schools need certainty, not uncertainty. In short, schools need to know what amount of money they will have for this next school year, and we would be adding to that difficulty. Many concerned Oregonians talk about the need for stable, long-term funding for schools. I believe that a discussion of this issue should take place. but not today and not in this future special session. Such a discussion needs to occur in a regular legislative session. In the meantime, it would be too risky for our schools and our students if these vetoes are sustained. Too much K-2 revenue would be lost. Too many programs would be cut. Too many teachers and other key people would be laid off. Again, these are reasons why the professional education groups are supporting an override, and those are some of the key reasons I, too, will support an override. So, colleagues, there are arguments, good arguments, as you've heard, for us to sustain the governor's vetoes. But I believe that there are stronger, better arguments for us to override. I urge your support to override the veto on House Bill 4056. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the motion.
To the motion.
Mr. Speaker and colleagues, I really want to talk to the school children and college students, to their parents, their teachers, and everyone here who cares about their education. Someone has to tell you, and it's too late to break the news to you gently. The Republican leadership in this building says they love you best, but they've been cheating on you behind your backs, and now they're doing it out in public. Sure, they bought you flowers for your birthday. Did they tell you they paid for it with your credit card? They didn't spend a dime of their own money. And while school children have had to hold bake sales and scrounge for pennies, the Republican leadership has been out dancing with the public safety folks. And tattooed on their chests, it says farm subsidies and timber giveaways. It doesn't say school children and learning. While school children and their parents have to give up textbooks and pencils and school nurses, the Republican leadership in this body spent cash money to buy a diamond ring for tax cuts for wealthy people and out-of-state businesses that don't need it. Someone has to tell you. Open your eyes. My colleague from Myrtle Creek brought our attention to a chart about what might happen. We all need to understand that what she pointed to as might happen will happen only if the Republican leadership of this body lets it happen. She neglected to call your attention to the middle columns on this page, and I'd like you to look at those. I'd like the school children and their parents in this state to look at what the Republican leadership of this legislature has done to the schools that they love the best. Schools have taken an 11.5% cut under the Republican budget. Human services, only 5%. Public safety, only 2.5%. Natural resources, only 3.7%. This is not the way you show someone you love them best. If schools were their top priority, schools would have been protected, and they could have done it without raising any new money. Even if the Republican leadership of this chamber doesn't have enough faith in its own members.
We need to keep the remarks focused to the subject of the measure, and that is the bonding.
I will, thank you. If the Republican leadership of this chamber doesn't have enough faith in its own members that we can do better, then I want to tell you I do have faith in us. I have faith in my colleagues in the Republican caucus. I have faith in my colleagues in the Democratic caucus. If this is the best they can do for you, then we need to start over. We don't have to raise more money if they don't want to. We can rebalance the budget. And I challenge the school advocates and the school children and the parents and the teachers who really want to protect our schools to demand from them that we rebalance this budget and show that schools truly are our top priority, and we cut them only after we have cut other programs that are of lower priority.
Further discussion, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the motion.
To the motion.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, about 6 weeks ago, we all came down to the Capitol. Over the course of 19 days, 19 very tiring, frustrating, harrowing days, we worked through a process to try to deal with a bloated, emerging, growing budget deficit. Now, ultimately, we came up with a series of bills to deal with that enormous challenge that confronted this state in a way that respected everybody in the process, that respected Republicans and Democrats, House and Senate, and it certainly respected the governor's office and his interest in this issue as well. And what we came up with in many ways wasn't pretty. It certainly wasn't ideal. There's pieces of what we came up with that all of us didn't like. But in the end, it was a responsible, reasoned, honorable compromise. And most importantly, it was nonpartisan, colleagues. It wasn't one party thrusting its will upon another party. It was nonpartisan. And when you look at the votes on every one of the key measures that formed that compromise, there was strong Republican and Democrat support. Let's review for a minute what that compromise was. One, we raised taxes. We increased cigarette taxes. We delayed ballot measure 88. Those two measures brought in about $250 million additional dollars for this biennium. Some of us didn't like that at all. Some of us had even committed that we were going to oppose tax increases, but as the budget deficit got bigger and bigger, we recognized that we couldn't be running just on ideology. We had to do what was right to protect schools and other essential services in the state of Oregon. We enacted some spending reductions because we're trying to be prudent and responsible in using the public's money. So we looked for efficiencies. And particularly the members, Republican and Democrat, who worked on that worked very responsibly to find efficiencies. And then we used some existing dollars and some one-time revenues. Again, not a beautiful plan, not an ideal plan, but in difficult circumstances, it was a reasonable plan and it was a nonpartisan plan that all of us, Republicans and Democrats, worked together on. When House Bill 4056 came to the floor several weeks ago, 48 members of this body voted for it. Only 10 voted against it. This wasn't a Republican bill or a Democrat bill. This was a bill that was part of a nonpartisan solution to address a very serious problem. Let's review for a minute, why did 48 members support this bill when it was here 6 weeks ago? First and foremost, we recognize there's an urgent need to protect schools in Oregon from serious budget cuts this next year. This was a key piece of that. It was a key piece in terms of the first $50 million, but it was even more critical because even at that time, we recognized that we may have a declining revenue picture with the next forecast. So this was a key piece to protect schools, both now and in the future, if the revenue forecast continues to decline. And then secondly, we recognized, after 19 days of discussion, we recognized that we weren't going to do a broad overhaul of our tax system. You're not going to do that in a special session. We did have the courage to increase taxes. We brought in additional revenues. But we also recognized this was neither the time nor the place, nor was there the opportunity to talk about totally revamping Oregon's tax system. So we made a prudent, a responsible, a nonpartisan choice. Colleagues, since that time, nothing has changed. School funding remains a very critical issue and is facing very serious cuts if we don't keep to the honorable compromise that we passed 6 weeks ago. Our economy isn't getting better. In fact, it looks to most of us that the recession is going to linger and that the revenues will probably even decline more. And now we are just 2 or 3 weeks away when schools all over the state of Oregon are going to admit over 500,000 children who are coming looking for an opportunity for a bright future based upon a good education. Colleagues, no, this is not ideal policy, but this is a responsible and a reasonable approach to protect Oregon schools during very difficult times. And what's more important in terms of the long run is that we showed that we had the ability, through 19 very difficult days, we had the ability to come together and to forge a broad-based, nonpartisan, responsible approach to dealing with this very serious issue. So for all of those reasons, colleagues, I hope you will join me today. Just as we came together several weeks ago, you will join me and the other members of this body who are committed to protecting schools to vote to override the governor's veto, to bring some certainty.
Excuse me, Representative. Representative Betsy Close yields.
Thank you, Representative. I hope you will join again, Republican and Democrat, to bring some certainty, to bring some adequacy and stability to our schools when we're just 3 weeks away from opening the schools. You know, the alternatives we could debate forever, but colleagues, we did that for 19 days. What we forged here ultimately was a plan that can work and will work, and it's important that we stay the course, get this accomplished today, and protect our schools for this coming year. So thank you, Mr. Speaker, and colleagues, please, let's come back together in a nonpartisan way and protect schools in the state of Oregon. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative March, you're in the privilege queue.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I just want to make a correction of fact. According to the information before us, the bill passed 32-27 in its final form.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the motion.
To the motion.
Colleagues, I don't have a prepared statement, so this will be relatively short. I was quoted in the Register Guard, I believe, last week as saying that I didn't like this bill. And that still is true. I don't like this bill. In fact, if you remember back to the third special session, I was the 31st vote on this bill, and I did that reluctantly. The reason is because I don't like borrowing, never have. But the reality of it is we had three options. We can either increase revenue, decrease expenditures, or borrow. The path that would take the most courage and the one that would be the right one to do would be to decrease revenue, and we laid a lot of decrease expenditures, and we laid a lot of things on the table during the first three special sessions that would have accomplished that, and didn't get very far with them. That is what would take courage. The path of least resistance would be to increase revenue. And we could abdicate responsibility and refer something out to the people and say, public, it's up to you as to whether we raise taxes. My sense is, and all the polling I've seen shows that the public will say, no, we are not going to raise taxes. And I would be one of the people, as a member of the public, that would not vote to raise taxes. Okay, so we have eliminated two options. That only leaves borrowing as the third and final option we have on the table, and that is what this bill is. It's borrowing. It's not the best solution, but it is appropriate. It is one that we can live with. When you look at the level of bonding that we have done in this state, we have a lot of room still for bonding. We are in good shape. You know, I'm gonna vote to override. not because I think this is the best public policy, but simply because the options that we had were so limited that this is the best choice we have left. So I urge you to vote to override this veto. You know, if we don't do it and we expect to put something on the ballot in November to fill this very same hole, that puts a lot of programs off into the next year with uncertainty as to their funding. And I don't think that is a responsible thing for us as a legislative body to do. We need to give them as high a level of certainty as we can at this point in time, and this is the appropriate way to do it. In fact, I think I've talked myself into maybe being a little bit stronger yes than I was when I started. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Kefouri.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the motion.
To the motion.
This has not been an easy decision for anybody in this body to make, and I think one thing is for certain, and that is that there are good reasons to vote on either side of this motion. And I respect my colleagues who have struggled for days and for weeks about their decision, like I have. But fundamentally, I reject the notion that a vote to sustain the governor's veto is a vote to cut education. What seems to be forgotten in this discussion is that there are other options besides cutting schools or running up our debt. There are reasonable solutions that this legislature has repeatedly refused to consider. We have been told over and over that this budget is the best this legislature can do. I believe that the children of Oregon deserve better than accounting gimmicks and payday loans. And I will vote today to sustain the governor's vetoes because I want to look at other options. I want to find a way to protect our schools now and in the future. But regardless of how this vote turns out today, I hope this crisis has made it clear that it is past time to find real solutions for our school funding problems. It is past time to provide children the educational opportunities that they deserve. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the motion. I will allow that I have sat down to write this speech three times and wrote it six different ways, and so I finally decided there are no prepared remarks that will really capture what I think is the best thing to be said right now, and that's what's in my heart. Before I begin, I really want to take exception to some of the remarks made by my good colleague and friend from Milwaukee. Colleagues, I know every one of us in this body values the function and the funding and the philosophy of public education. It is, as a good representative from Southeast Portland has said, what makes America, America, and I applaud his remarks. But when an individual stands on this floor and says that we have valued other funding streams above K-12, that individual could not be more wrong. I would submit to you that if the proposals submitted by this body are fully implemented, the entire amount of money that will be reduced from the K-12 budget, $5.2 billion, is $82 million. That is 1.5%. While budgets such as the judiciary, state police, Department of Corrections are sustaining 10, 12, and 14% reductions. And that if we were to go across the board and reduce all budgets equally, K-12 would not be reduced by $82 million. It would be reduced by $800 million. So for someone to suggest that this is not a difficult decision and that we as a body, both sides of the aisle, don't value K-12 and that we have not put literally the people's money where our mouths are, I take exception to that. Having said that, I want everyone to know that I agree with our governor. I agree with my governor. And that is, we must, as a legislature and as a people, answer the fundamental question, are we as Oregonians willing to pay for the services that we have come to expect and enjoy? But that is not the question being debated here today, and that is not the purpose of these special sessions. It is a great distinction between coming here to answer the state's revenue issues and what we were called here to do, to balance the state's budget. I would submit to you that we have done an excellent job. Sure, there are things that I would rather see in that budget. There are things the governor would rather see in that budget. There are things that every one of us rather were or would or rather were not in that budget. But that's the process. That's the great genius that our forefathers put in place in a room no larger than this in Philadelphia. The governor has vetoed these. That is absolutely his constitutional right. It's part of the grand scheme of separation of powers. And has served this nation nobly and well for over 200 years. I am proud to be here today, not to try to override a governor, but in the exercising of those constitutional rights. That's what this is about. And I appreciate each and every one of you being here. Earlier I said I was proud of the way we've balanced this budget.
Your time has elapsed. Representative Bruce Starr yields.
Thank you, Representative. You know, we've all got different opinions as to what this budget is. And I'm getting tired, weary of the allusions to gimmickry and Enron accounting. You know, it is my opinion that we've done a good job balancing this budget. But that's just not my opinion. We balanced it three times. And unlike our good neighbors to the north, Washington, and our neighbor to the south, California, and 22 other states, each time the work of this body has been evaluated by the professional bond rating services, and each time the product from Oregon has passed muster with those guys that work on the 82nd floor of the glass and steel high-rises that wear the green eye shades. And each time they have said that Oregon's financial condition and stability still warrants the excellent credit rating that we enjoyed prior to going into this recession. Let me say that again. all of the work that this body has produced, as contentious as it has been, as disappointing as it is to some, we have still preserved the credit rating that this state enjoys, thereby saving us hundreds of millions of dollars over the next 10 years. 24 other states do not enjoy that privilege. So I would submit to you today that is regrettable but necessary as this motion is, I strongly suggest and humbly ask that you override the governor's veto. We know that this is not the end, that part of this product is to build a rickety bridge into the next session so we can fundamentally address Governor Kitzhaber's question, his very astute and needed question. Are Oregonians willing to pay for the services that they expect and enjoy? But until then, let's practice the Hippocratic Oath. Let's do the least harm. Let's fund our schools. Let's carry ourselves into the next session. And then I, along with many of my colleagues, pledge not to this body, but also to this body, but most importantly, to Oregon, our Oregon, to answer the question. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Colleagues, I wish to call the House back to order under the call and ask our good Sergeant-at-Arms to round up any members from my office. Next item on our agenda is to have Representative Max Williams close. Representative Williams, if you'd just stand at ease for a moment. Everybody. All members are present here on the floor.
I didn't put the phone.
Have your attention now, Representative Max Williams. Do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I don't know at this stage of the debate on this motion that it's possible to persuade. Many of you have made excellent points. I'd like to respond to a couple. Several of you made points that I don't think deserve a response, and I'll leave those alone. To my good colleague...
Order in the House, please.
To my good colleague from Southeast Portland, I too have read and reread the Adams biography, and I find great lessons of politics and learning in the book by McCullough. And if you'll bear with me, I'll share the one that I think is relevant today. In the early period of the Continental Congress, John Adams corresponded with Abigail about his desperate frustrations that members of the Continental Congress were not moving as quickly to a declaration of independence as he would like them to move. He was desperate to move to solve the problem and to move to independence, and his colleagues in the Congress were not coming along with him as quickly as he would like. And in a beautiful piece of correspondence, Abigail responded, and in doing so, she quoted William Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. That famous line that goes, and if you'll bear with me, I'll try to do it. There is a tide among the affairs of men which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune. Admitted, omitted, all our hopes are lost in shallows and in the miseries, and we must take the current when it serves or lose our purpose. It's about timing, colleagues.
Abigail understood it. And she told John, it's about timing, taking the current when it serves. Colleagues, if we were to move right now on some of the proposals that you would like us to debate on the floor today or tomorrow, and they were rejected out of hand in a November election, we would have taken the tide at the wrong stage, and our opportunities would be lost. The timing is now, colleagues, to guarantee and give some certainty for schools in September, and to continue to have the discussion and the debate and the dialogue, not amongst ourselves, not in the vacuum of this chamber, but with Oregonians who are yet divided on the issue of where we should go on adequacy, stability, and certainty for school funding until we gain a consensus support to move to a solution. There's been a lot here today said about leadership. I'll tell you the definition of leadership that I like, if I can find it. The definition of leadership I like is leadership is responsibly creating opportunities for change. That's leadership. Responsibly creating opportunities for change. Leadership is not driving the train off the end of the trestle in an effort to demonstrate that you need to finish building out the railroad track to the other side. That is not leadership. There's been a lot also here said today about who loves Oregon's children most. Poppycock. There isn't a person in this body who isn't in here trying to do the right thing for kids. It's a spurious remark. All of us value education. All of us value Oregon's school children. We may have a difference of opinion on how to get there, but there is no difference of opinion even among most of the professional education institutions about the result of our failure to override the governor's vetoes today. That is not an issue. And while there are some, and let's see if I got the quote here, who said that they fundamentally reject the notion that not overriding these vetoes won't result in cuts to schools, I would suggest that you can fundamentally reject the notion all you want, but you can also bury your head in the sand. School starts in 2 weeks, and we won't have this problem solved in 2 weeks, and districts and superintendents and school boards and parents and teachers must make decisions about how to proceed. We need the time to develop the broad public support beyond this chamber for a solution to this problem that all of us want, that all of us pledge and have pledged a willingness and a desire to work for. But there is no reason to cause the destruction that could occur just around the corner in order to get there. It's all about timing, colleagues. And we must take the current when it serves or lose our purpose. My purpose today is to vote to override this veto to provide some certainty for schools. That's my purpose. It's not about anything else. It's not about the governor. It's not about the partisan sniping. It's to buy us time to find the longer-term solution, and I ask you to join me in that purpose today. I ask you to put aside the partisan bickering and the sniping, to forget about what the editorial boards will or won't write about this issue, and to do something for schools that we can do immediately, knowing that the situation ahead is going to get worse, and knowing that the choices we are going to have to make will be harder, and commit to go down that path with me as well as I commit to go down that path with you today. I've been told that the Senate has just overridden in a bipartisan vote, have overridden the governor's veto in a bipartisan vote on the shift. 22 to 6 is the vote. I hope, colleagues, that we can demonstrate that same resolve, that same commitment, that same bipartisan cooperation in this chamber as they have just demonstrated in the chamber across the rotunda. Thank you.
Those of the opinion that House Bill 4056 should be repassed, notwithstanding the governor's veto, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Lee, how do you vote?
Representative Lee votes aye.
Representative Winters, how do you vote?
Representative Winters votes aye.
I vote aye.
Representative Merkley, how do you vote?
No.
Merkley votes no.
The House will come to order. Representative Williams.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to change my vote from yes to no and serve possible notice of reconsideration.
Representative Williams changes his vote from aye to nay and serves notice of possible reconsideration. The motion to override the governor's, the motion to repass House Bill 4056, notwithstanding the governor's veto, having not received the required two-thirds majority, is declared failed. Representative Leonard.
Mr. Speaker, I move for immediate reconsideration.
That motion has been made by Representative Williams. Under special session rules, reconsideration must come up immediately. We will be at ease for a few moments.